The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A big ruling from a law judge on Amazon, and this one involves the CEO. What happened on International Workers' Day this week? And today on the show, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and it's our first Friday with Fred. Welcome to the Friday, May 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. First Friday in May, that goes to Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, website columbusconstruction.org. Dorsey got back last week from the NABTU, that's the North American Building Trades Union's legislative conference. There were endorsements there of President Biden. He's going to talk about that. He's going to talk about moving forward in construction. We'll zero in on Central Ohio, get an update on the Intel plant airport expansion, which has been a thorn in Dorsey's side because the work, and that's a lot of work. It's a $2 billion contract, and it went to a non-union outfit. We'll also talk about worker safety. It was a week ago that the AFL-CIO issued its latest report on the state of safety and health protections for America's workers. And they do this every year. It's called the Death on the Job Report, the toll of neglect. And the neglect is, my gosh, so many businesses kind of look the other way when it comes to worker safety. And some of the highlights, and Dorsey's going to hone this in on his experience in Central Ohio. In 2022, 344 workers died each day from hazardous working conditions. 5,486 workers were killed on the job in the United States, and 120,000 workers died from occupational diseases. Now, Workers' Memorial Day is commemorated because it was 53 years ago, and the date was April 28th, when OSHA started. Because of OSHA, and there was a lot of people that didn't want OSHA to happen, and there's still people that would like to defund OSHA. But since OSHA happened 53 years ago, the AFL-CIO has calculated there are 690,000 people alive today. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Now, the report, I'll tell you, it's so detailed. I urge you to go to the AFL-CIO website and download the report. There's pages and pages and pages. There's charts. There's state-by-state analysis. Wyoming. The state of Wyoming has the highest fatality rates. 12.7 per 100,000 workers. North Dakota was second. Mississippi was third, 6.9 per 100,000 workers. New Mexico is in there. Then West Virginia and Louisiana. Okay, what did I just do? Six states there? Five of those states are right-to-work states. Black workers' job fatality rate, the highest it has been in nearly 15 years. And Fred Redmond will be joining us later in the show. Fred, of course, the Secretary Treasurer, the AFL-CIO, been involved in steel for, well, the steel union and the steel industry for 50-plus years. And he is going to give some personal stories of what he saw in his industry over the years. Listen to this. 734 black workers died on the job, the highest number in at least 20 years in the year 2022. Latino workers' job fatality rate, that increase to 4.6 per 100,000 workers, meaning they continue to face the greatest risk of dying on the job than all workers at 24% higher than the national average. It's amazing. It really is amazing. So Dorsey's going to touch on it. Fred Redmond's really going to get into it as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now, a brief look into the world of labor, the segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. An NLRB administrative law judge ruled this week that the Amazon CEO Andy Jassy's comments to the media regarding unionization efforts at the company were a violation of federal labor law. The general counsel's brief drew attention to three groups of predictions that Jassy has made during several press interviews about the consequences of unionization. That, number one, after unionization, employees would lose their direct relationship with management. Number two, employees would be less empowered since unions involve more bureaucracy. And number three, that employees would be better off without a union. Boy, I've heard that so many times. What do you need the union for? They're just going to get in the way. Well, the law judge, Brian Gee, found that while Jassy's predictions that unionization would change the employee-employer relationship were lawful, the 20 predictions that employees would be less empowered, would find it harder to get things done quickly, and would be better off without a union actually violated Section 8A1. Because they went beyond merely commenting on the employee-employer relationship and did not comply with the standards for protected speech. Well, under labor law, a manager can make predictions regarding the effects of unionization, but the prediction must be carefully phrased on the basis of objective fact to convey an employer's belief as to demonstrably probable consequences beyond his control, or else it transforms into, quote, impermissible threat of retaliation, end of quote. Gee found that Jassy offered no objective basis, none, for his assertion. So he ordered Amazon to cease and desist from making such coercive statements. He also instructed the company to post at each of its facilities nationwide and distribute electronically notices informing employees of their rights under the National Labor Relations Act and committing to abstention from future threats and coercion. Boy, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And guess what? Amazon has stated it plans to appeal the ruling to the board, claiming that, and this is a quote, the decision reflects poorly on the state of free speech rights today. Wow. Got to hand it to that judge. In recognition of International Workers' Day, which was Wednesday, May 1st, workers and communities all around the globe took to the streets to protest working conditions and protections and demand better from their governments. In Paris, Beirut, Istanbul, Berlin, Manila, Jakarta, and many more cities, the protest called attention to poor wages and conditions, environmental harms, lack of social welfare, as well as anti-labor policies. And in Los Angeles, the city's May Day Coalition, which is made up of several labor organizations, organized a powerful march with the theme, Solidarity is Power, the People United. And the focus of the demonstration was to collect support for better wages, housing for all, a pass to citizenship, the right to strike, and a ceasefire in war-torn areas, and an end to all wars. A lot of demands there. And one more here. The 10th Circuit Court upheld a U.S. Department of Labor rule requiring government contractors to pay seasonal recreational workers at least $15 an hour. Now, the rule implemented President Biden's 2021 executive order raising the minimum wage for workers on federal contracts to $15 an hour and eliminating a Trump-era exemption for seasonal recreational employers. Now, rafting companies challenged the elimination of the exemption in 2021, arguing that forcing recreational firms to pay workers $15 an hour would limit the services they provide and raise their costs. The Tenth Circuit reasoned that the department had addressed those concerns in the rule, which asserts that higher wages reduce worker absenteeism and turnover and increase the quality of services provided to the government as well as the public. In dissent, one of the judges, Allison Eade, argued that the Procurement Act is unconstitutional for failing to impose limits on the president's procurement power. How difficult it is to get to $15 an hour. And you know what? We were talking about raising the minimum wage and the campaign that started, my gosh, over a decade ago to the Fight for 15 movement. Did you know that 20 states, and all of them are in the South, 20 states in the country are still at the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour? Can you believe that? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information, this segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. And next Tuesday is Teacher Appreciation Day. In fact, all next week is Teacher Appreciation Week, and we'll be joining Melissa Cropper, one of our sponsors, on the show. She is the president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. And I always say, you know, every day is Teachers Appreciation Day. Let's support our teachers. And I tell you, our legislature should get that message, too, when it comes to funding public education. Well, that's another story. We'll cover that next week. Right now, though, let's go down to Central Ohio. And joining us, as he does each and every month, is Mr. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can follow them on X, formerly known as Twitter, at BuildCentralOH. We'll get an update on Building Central OH. But right now, We're going to talk about the legislative conference that Dorsey attended last week in Washington, the North American Building Trades Union. And so this was conference number 20 for you. Is that right, Dorsey?
Conference number 20. When I was elected as business manager of the Insulators in 2004, I attended my first conference. And incredible, you know, as a first time to go and be around 3,000 to 4,000 delegates from all across United States and Canada and North America from all different trades, and here are abundance of speakers from all around the country. And this conference ranked right up there in the top three of all the conferences that I've attended. Obviously, you know, with the president coming and speaking, he addressed the delegation Wednesday afternoon. That was tremendous. Talked about all the jobs created by the CHIPS Act, not only in manufacturing, but also the building trades jobs created. Talked about everything that he's doing. From where he overhauled the National Labor Relations Board to make it more pro-union and pro-worker friendly, talked about the Inflation Reduction Act, talked about a lot of the clean energy stuff he's doing, not only hydrogen, but the stuff that's creating work for solar, which is so abundant here in Columbus and Central Ohio, which creates thousands of jobs for the electricians, operating engineers, the laborers, which is tremendous, but was just great to have him come in. And it was, you know, it was kind of like sitting down and talking to him, but he was up on stage addressing 3,000 delegates. And, you know, he was just going through all the accomplishments and everything he's done in his 4 years in office, expanding project labor agreements, expanding Davis-Bacon, you know, infrastructure, which was huge. You know, we kind of joked about it, you know, when former President Trump was elected, the first thing he did was he met with Sean McGarvey and, you know, former general president of the IBEW, Ed Hill, and a few others. And he said the first thing he was going to do was pass an infrastructure bill. And in his 4 years, he never even attempted to pass an infrastructure bill because, you know, we had our failing infrastructure and so much it needed to be done. And it was kind of like a running gag amongst building trades members and electeds that, you know, on Monday morning you would come in, you'd be like, hey, the infrastructure week. Trump's going to pass that infrastructure bill. It's infrastructure week. And, of course, infrastructure week never came. And that's one of the first things that President Biden did. And it's not only roads and bridges, but it's, you know, water treatment facilities and it's, you know, manufacturing. And it's just everything that's being created from the policies that he's implemented that has created, like I said, thousands and thousands of good-paying union jobs for building trades members all across the United States.
And more importantly, too, that Infrastructure and Jobs Act, he reached across the aisle. That was a bipartisan deal. The other pieces of legislation, it didn't go that way, but they still seem to be supporting it. It's funny, too, because even though a lot of these conservatives that don't vote for it, when they go back to their districts and they see the jobs that are being created, they say, hey, you know what? That was a pretty good idea, even though I didn't vote for it. But anyway, that's just the politics. That's the politics of the world that we live in today. You mentioned that the mayor of Cleveland, Justin Bibb, was he the only mayor at the legislative conference?
Yeah, he was the only mayor that addressed the delegates, and he spoke on day one. He was one of the, he wasn't the first, but was one of the first speakers. And, you know, anytime Mayor Bibb speaks, whether it's, you know, if you're having a conversation with him one-on-one, if it's in a small room, if it's over a meal, or, you know, up on stage, like I said, in front of 3,000 elected labor leaders and delegates, he does a tremendous job. I mean, does a great job getting his point across, has some tremendous ideas. I know he's working tremendously hard in Cleveland with Dave Wondolowski, the head of the Cleveland Building Trades, and everybody up there in labor to make sure that they're strengthening a lot of the policies and stuff that are going to help working class people in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County and Northeast Ohio. And it was just very, you know, I hadn't talked to him in probably a couple of months, and it was just very refreshing to be able to hear him and, you know, talk about what he's doing in Cleveland and some of the policies he's enacting, and just a young, dynamic leader that I think has a really, really high ceiling. And it was great to hear from him and what he's doing on the local level and what elected leaders and labor together can accomplish, not only for their members, but also their community. You know, a lot of these policies are going to help a lot of folks in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County get on that path to the middle class, which is really, really great. And I was so glad you know, it's great hearing from Congress people. It's great hearing from senators. Obviously, it's awesome hearing from President Biden. But I like to hear from some of these younger leaders, too, and some of these folks on the local level to hear about some of these policies that they're doing and that they're implementing to help people as well. You know, you and I talk about it all the time whenever we discuss politics. Politics is local, and that's some of the things that are going to have more of a direct impact on your families and stuff that's happening on the local level.
Dorsey, if you don't mind, I'm just wondering if the conversation of getting more people into apprenticeship programs came up at the NAB2 conference, because as you know, I know you're struggling in Central Ohio. You're doing a great job because there's so many job opportunities down there with Intel, Facebook, Amazon, you name it. It's just exploding. Did Sean McGarvey address that on the national scale on what they're doing? Because I know they're doing a lot of outreach. They want to get more women in the trades, people of color. Did that happen last week at the legislative conference?
Yeah. So with the North American Building Trades and their trade futures, they're doing a lot to help councils around the country not only recruit and grow their apprenticeship program, but also to find funding and either implement, like we did here in Columbus 8 years ago, either implement apprenticeship readiness program or strengthen their current apprenticeship readiness program, such as Cleveland Builds up there in Cleveland that does a tremendous job. But there was a huge emphasis on that. And also, and I think we're doing a good job. I think we could do better, but I think we're doing a really good job. We've got to continue to get out in these underserved communities where people maybe don't know a lot about unions, know a lot about the building trade, know about apprenticeships, and let these folks know about these incredible opportunities that are available, especially with all the work and the backlog of work that's currently there. So you're right. It's every day. It's reaching out to veterans. It's reaching out to women. It's reaching out to people of color. It's reaching out to immigrants. You know, we have a huge new American population here in Columbus and Central Ohio. We have Haitians. We have Somalis. People that have come here looking for a better life that are now citizens here, that are coming in to build futures. They're coming in and applying for our apprenticeship programs. They're going to work on solar jobs as electricians. They're going to work, you know, as painters. They're going to work as insulators, all the crafts, sheet metal workers. So I think it's, you know, we just got to cast a really wide net, really reach out to folks, and just make sure that they're aware of these opportunities. Especially restored citizens. You know, there's folks that, you know, have maybe had some hiccups in their past and are now out looking for, you know, a second chance. And I think we've been incredibly successful with identifying those folks, giving them services and wraparound services that can help them remove barriers to get them on the right path and get them into our apprenticeship programs and get them on that path to journeyman and mechanic member status so they can really provide for their families and themselves. So, yeah, that was a big thing. And on Monday, which is, I don't want to say it's an off day, but it's kind of the first day of the conference before a lot of the speeches and stuff start on Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, they had a open class to anybody that afternoon that I attended. It was called Respect. And they talked about these apprenticeship readiness programs. They talked about our apprenticeship programs. They talked about some of the things that we can be working with on, you know, not only apprentices and pre-apprentices, but also our current members, you know, to let them know that there's a big cultural shift in a lot of our local unions as we're bringing in a more diverse population. And I think everybody's embracing that because they're seeing that with all the work available, we have a incredible opportunity to grow our membership and to help everybody, not only in our local unions, but like I said, everyone in our community to better themselves.
Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line today. Dorsey, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce, ColumbusConstruction.org. More to come from Dorsey later in the show. It's going to be our first Friday with Fred Redmond of the AFL-CIO, talking about worker safety. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Are you looking for a new healthcare partner for your union members? Let Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield be your champion, making sure your members live their healthiest lives. Now more than ever, it's important to have a partner you can trust, one who understands the unique challenges unions face. Anthem provides a variety of options to meet your organization's needs and helps you control costs without sacrificing quality of care. For more information, visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least 5 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. All right, let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. All right, let's get an update here on the Intel plant. I was surfing the web the other day, and I saw some renderings of that Intel plant. Wow, I really didn't catch those before. Pretty exciting. Where are we in that project right now? I know there's a few delays. Maybe you can fill us in on the status. Go ahead, Dorsey.
Yeah, so good timing. We had our monthly meeting with Bechtel to get an update just this past Tuesday. So there's 1,053 craft workers on site right now. They want to scale up to 2,500 by the end of the year. This is going to top out at probably about 6,000 to 7,000 on the fabs. Then you add in the parking garage, you add in the parking and kind of the stuff around it. You add in the front of the house, which is the office building. And you add in the water treatment plant, which is probably, when we break ground, at the time of breaking ground, the budget on that's probably going to be maybe $650, $700 million. So when you add that all in at peak, there'll be anywhere from 9,000 to 10,000 people out there working on the facility. And that doesn't include the people outside of the gate that are reinforcing and strengthening bridges, widening roads, all the infrastructure that's out there to make sure that those folks can get in and out of work safely without traffic tie-ups or, adversely affecting the townships, the villages, the cities, and the communities around the plant. But, you know, you spoke about the video that Intel released, which basically shows when the first phase, the first two fabs are completed, which now they're saying all in is probably going to be about $28 billion. What that's going to look like. And I tell you, it's tremendous for somebody who's been to Arizona, to Ocotillo, and somebody who's been to Portland and walked through those facilities. And I've been going out every couple of weeks to the Intel site and seeing the progress that's been made with multiple cranes, the two batch plants for concrete, the trucks running pretty much 24/7, the huge amounts of concrete that they've poured, and stuff starting to come out of the ground vertically now. It's just amazing. And then to see the video that they released, what it's all going to look like when it's done, probably mid-2027, is just incredible. So the progress out there is awesome. We're doing everything we can to keep up with manpower demands. We're having the really hard, intense conversations now about outreach events, not only in Columbus and Franklin County, but also closer to the Intel plant in Licking County to attract more people to the job. You know, we're talking about what we can do to really amp up training, recruitment, apprenticeship readiness programming to make sure that we're working together with Intel and Bechtel to make sure that this thing is manned up, the people are there, they're making the good wages and benefits, and we're building a world-class facility for Intel. So it's just, I know every month I go on and on about it, but it is incredible how fast and how much gets done out there. It is just absolutely awesome. Awesome facility.
And it, there's more, though. You got Amazon. You got Google. I mean, you got the new Silicon Valley in Central Ohio here. How are those projects faring right now, Dorsey?
Yeah, they're all going good. I mean, we're constantly having conversations with Amazon. We met with them last week to talk about the multiple, not just projects, but the multiple sites that they have in Central Ohio now. You know, we're always in constant conversation with Google and the three campuses they have. They continue to roll out more work and build and expand and grow as this data center technology, and as you know, like you said, Senator Brown said, renamed us, you know, the Silicon Heartland. As all this is growing up here in Columbus and Central Ohio, it's just incredible. And then you factor onto that, and we talked about it earlier about infrastructure. You know, the city of Columbus is getting ready to expand a lot of their water treatment facilities and wastewater treatment facilities because of the influx and the growth of the population. And it was announced this week that they're finalizing the budget on a new water treatment facility that looks to break ground in probably late 2025, maybe early 2026. That's going to be right around $1.2 billion. So I think that'll be the next mega project on the horizon that we sit down and we talk to the folks, which I've met with them several times, but the director of utilities, Kristen Aith, at the city of Columbus, and we talk about what we can do to make sure that this project, you know, has plenty of bidders, plenty of contractors. You know, we stay on budget, we stay on time, and that we get plenty of workers there to make sure that we construct this facility, but also have workers to maintain the facility after it's built. So it's exciting times here. It's probably 95% of my job now is just out meeting with people, making sure we're helping them stay timely with their projects, no matter what stage they're in, and then also reinforcing what we're doing on the workforce development side and getting out in the community and speaking and trying to attract more and more people to come into the building trades.
And then there's the airport expansion. And I know this is a thorn in your side here. This is a $2 billion project, and it looks like it's going to be all non-union here. It's just a sad state of affairs. We've talked about this many, many times on the show. I know you're doing your best to make the best out of it. Well, where do we stand with that right now?
Yeah, so we're still working with them. You know, the unfortunate thing is even though we don't have a community benefit agreement right now, the thing that's really unfortunate has been, you know, the board members, few of them I have a personal relationship with. One of them's Kenny McDonald. Very disappointed in him and some of those board members. You know, we've had meeting requests. We've, you know, made phone calls. I've done outreach. And to try to talk to them that even if they're not going to do a PLA on this job, you know, to make sure that they're working with us on the schedule and stuff so we can drive our contractors there. Because, you know, this is a $1 billion project, and I know that their intent and trying to use smaller contractors to help them grow and trying to, you know, even having the flexibility and ability to bring in non-union contractors and out-of-state contractors and out-of-state workers. There's you know, a $1 billion airport, there's only so many contractors in Columbus and Central Ohio that can do a project this size. And the vast majority of them are going to be union contractors because of their accessibility, sure, to workforce, right? So we know that we're going to get a lot of that work out there, even if there's no project labor agreement. What I'm trying to explain to local elected leaders, like our Franklin County commissioners and our mayor and people in the community, is, you know, you guys think that I'm, you know, being, you know, over the top on this about fighting for worker protections. You know, I'm fighting for the non-union worker just as much as I'm fighting for the union worker. My members out there are going to make top wages and earn top benefits. I'm concerned about the people that are out there working for non-union contractors that aren't going to be making those top wages and aren't going to be getting health insurance and aren't going to be earning those top benefits. Those are the folks that we're fighting for. So when that project gets going and that job starts, if there's no project labor agreement on it or community benefit agreement, we're going to be working with our organizers and our reps, and we're going to be out there, and we're going to identify those folks that are making some standard wages and benefits, and we're going to make sure that we give them every opportunity that there is to bring them in so they can go to Google or Amazon or Facebook or Honda or Ohio State Medical Center or Intel or Apple or Microsoft or, you know, anywhere that we're making these top wages and benefits so they can earn the most for their families and provide for their families. That's what we're going to be doing when it comes to that airport project.
No doubt this could be a great organizing opportunity for you and all of Central Ohio for the trades over there. You know, without a doubt, and Dorsey, you know this, when it comes to non-union workers, especially in the trades, you see more accidents. You know, the contractors don't really take safety seriously as with the union shops. And last week, the AFL-CIO released their death on the job report, the toll of neglect. And sadly, in 2022, 344 workers died each day from hazardous working conditions. And altogether, 5,486 workers were killed on the job in the United States. Now, you've been in the trades for a long time here. And, you know, frankly, things have gotten better. When you go before OSHA, my God, there was a lot of accidents that resulted in death on the job. But I'm just wondering, I'd like to get your take. I'm sure you looked at the report, and you know, there's a lot going on in Central Ohio. How do you feel, you know, moving forward with worker safety in that area?
I think our unions, and specifically it starts at an early point, with our apprenticeship programs and our pre-apprenticeship programs, I think that we're doing everything that we can to make sure that our workers are trained and not only to work safe, but what a lot of contractors who don't understand the importance of safety, especially on the open shop side, don't understand that you can work safe and be productive at the same time. And a lot of times when you're working safely, you're finding more efficient methods to be able to get the work done. And that's the things that we really stress to our members, and we start off, like I said, in our apprenticeship programs, our pre-apprenticeship programs. I mean, we're adamant that in our apprenticeship readiness program, Building Futures, that when a person comes in, before they handle a tool, before they work on a cutting saw, before they do anything, they receive that OSHA safety certification, because we want them to be able to know how to work safely around not only their coworkers, but also with any tools that we may provide them, and also to be able to identify dangers or potential hazards in the workplace and how to mitigate them to work safely. Because, you know, you and I talked about this offline. The goal at the end of the day is to go home to your family and to your friends and be able to earn a good living, but also to be able to return home safely, you know, without any accidents. That's important. And I think that report stressed that. And I think it stressed the importance of what OSHA has done for the construction industry in the last 50 years since it was implemented.
Amen, brother. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. And that conversation about worker safety will continue with our next guest, Fred Redmond. Dorsey, you take care. ColumbusConstruction.org. We'll talk to you in June. Okay, brother?
All right. I appreciate you. We will talk soon. And I'm sure, like I said, we'll be talking about more Guardians baseball. Will be in the heat of the season, so it'll be awesome.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Fred Redmond, our first Friday with Fred, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel for more information. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org is their website. Let's go to line number two. Welcome a dear friend, longtime supporter of America's Workforce, and that would be Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. And I urge you to go to the AFL-CIO website, AFLCIO.org, and download the latest report on the state of safety and health protections for America's workers. And the Labor Fed has been doing this over three decades. And sadly, some of these numbers are going in the wrong direction. Fred, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today. And it's hard to believe that in 2022, 344 workers died each day from hazardous working conditions,
yeah.
And over 5,486 workers were killed on the job in the United States. And then you have to throw in those who die from occupational diseases
right.
that they got, like asbestos, say you're a coal miner. So you got 120,000 right. workers there. Blacks, Latinos, not faring well. Fred, this is very, very troublesome here. Maybe you can speak to it. I mean, you've seen this report come out so many years in a row. I'd like to get your take on it. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, Flash, thanks for having me this morning. Look, over the years, our progress has become more challenging as we see employers' opposition to workers' rights and protections. You know, that challenge has grown, and attacks on unions have intensified. And as a result, big business and many Republicans, they have launched an aggressive assault on workers' protections. And they are attempting to shift employers' responsibility to maintain a safe workplace to individual worker behavior. And that undermines the core responsibility of the workplace safety agencies, such as OSHA. So, yeah, we are alarmed at the report. But look, it's not totally surprising to us because when we look back, the Trump administration, they rolled back progress. They attacked long-standing workplace safety protections, targeted job safety rules on things like beryllium, mine safety examinations, and injury reporting. And they cut agency budgets and staff. And they attempted to dismantle the systems for future protection. So this is a problem, to say the least, but this is one of the core responsibilities of the government when it comes to workplace safety, is to provide a safe workplace. And we have a responsibility as a union to publish this report on behalf of our 60 affiliate unions to let the public know what is exactly happening when it comes to occupational safety and health. And I share your concern over the overall report. I would encourage your listeners to take a look at it.
We have to give accolades here to OSHA because this is an agency that's been attacked since day one. And since...
Right.
OSHA happened, which was in 1970 on
right.
April 28th. That's why we commemorate. That's the day we call Workers' Memorial Day. Since it happened, 690,000 workers can now say their lives have been saved. That's
right.
That's monumental. That really is. And think of that. I mean, almost 700,000 people are alive because of good legislation. Now, as you know, there's a lot of people in Congress that like OSHA to go away. They want to defund it altogether.
Right.
And sadly, here's glaring here, Fred. There's one inspector for every 80,014 workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, that's totally alarming. And, you know, but I have to say, I have to point out that, you know, the Biden administration, they have taken important steps to protect workers, like prioritizing worker protections on its regulatory agenda and taking steps on targeted enforcement efforts on urgent hazards and also filling staff and leadership vacancies. President Biden, he's appointed and nominated strong candidates focused on worker protection, the lead job safety and the health agencies and labor agencies. After he took office, he appointed a longtime steelworker safety and health leader, Jim Frederick, as the acting assistant secretary of occupational safety and health. And then 2021, the Senate confirmed Marty Walsh, the Boston mayor from the construction trade union and secretary of labor. And the president is trying to wrap his hands around this, but because of limited funding cut by the Congress, you know, look, we get into huge fights over the staffing stuff. They filibuster the bills to increase OSHA staffing. So the president has used the power of his office to do everything he can, you know, to make sure that the agency is stable, but it's not enough. Like you said, we got a shortage of inspectors, and the agency is trying to deal with the inflow of OSHA complaints. You know, they're working with the shoestring budget, even though we fought in 2021 against the Republican Congress to get an increase. It wasn't enough. So, you know, this is a problem.
The current OSHA budget amounts to $3.93 mm-hmm. available to protect each
That's
worker,
right.
according
right.
to this report. Less than $4.
Right.
Bar.
Right.
This part here, you're African-American. Mm-hmm. 734 black workers died on the job in 2022. That's the highest number in 20 years. The number of Latino
right.
worker deaths increased again. Of those killed on the job, 60% were immigrants. And here, look what's going on with immigrants in America here. You get the feeling that these workers are expendable? Is that the take of a lot of the employers today?
Well, yeah, that's the take of a lot of employers because what they do is they place these workers at the jobs with the higher risk. And, you know, they do not provide the adequate safety protection, the adequate safety equipment that these workers need. And, you know, look, they realize that these workers have came to America. In a lot of cases, a lot of them may be undocumented. And because of their eagerness to, you know, share in the American dream and work out, they take advantage of these workers. So, you know, the numbers are staggering. Same thing in the case of African-American workers, as you mentioned. They usually are assigned to the most dangerous and the most hazardous positions. And look, the situation where, you know, people need to go to work, okay, is one that's being exploited by some of these workers, and these racial inequities. They also cause this disease, and it's a situation where these workers are being taken advantage of. The employers are not providing adequate personal protection equipment, and also are not creating, in a lot of cases, a safe work environment, exposing them to dangerous hazards. And these workers don't know. I mean, a lot of them don't know the situations that they're working in, the chemicals they're working around. And this is why the budget needs to be increased, because these are the type of facilities that's exploiting these workers that, you know, we need inspectors on the job to go into these places and do thorough work inspections on a yearly basis.
Just to run down some of the industries with the highest fatality rates in 2022, mm-hmm. Number one, agriculture, forestry, fishing, and hunting. Mining was second. Oil and gas extraction, then transportation, warehousing. Construction was number four. Wholesale trade was number five. And also, older workers and minors are at risk. More than a third of the workplace fatalities occurred among workers ages 55 and older. And then you got kids, again, mostly immigrants. They become mm-hmm. the focus of exploitation. So it's really sad. Those of you listening, got to go check out the report. One more question here before we go, Fred. You spend your entire life at the steelworkers and the Steelworkers Union. I know you're a vice president of human affairs there, and you've seen a lot in that industry. Anything that you can share with us over the years? Because I know the steelworkers, they did everything possible. I mean, their leadership was dynamic over the years. They did everything possible to have workers safe on the job. But you know what? Accidents do happen. I'm just wondering if you could speak to the things that you've seen in your career.
Well, I've seen, thanks for that, Flash. And I've seen problems in the industry when I first came into the steel industry back in 1973. The conditions were totally deplorable. We was working with coke ovens in the steel making process, which now they all been converted to electric. But, over the years, the union have fought for increases on the job, and we have fought for to make sure that the companies are providing adequate safety equipment. But despite the efforts of the union, where we have safety committees, so at every one of our local unions is required to have a safety committee that work with their company counterparts to do safety inspections, investigate safety accidents. But despite all of that effort, we have seen a bunch of employers who try to take shortcuts, who try to put profits ahead of people. They try to take shortcuts, and our people have held fast. We've held steady over the years. We've had strikes strictly to improve safety and health conditions on the job, particularly in the steel industry. And it's an evolving process. I'm proud of my union for the work that we have done to ensure a safe workplace for all of our members. It's our number one priority, and as we go forward, it will continue to be.
Safety first. Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, our first Friday with Fred. Well, you stay safe, my brother. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you, Flash. Take care.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, Milwaukee's Tools for the Trade. We'll talk about safety with the iron workers, and Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.